weekly review, episode number 67, and we are live tonight on both DLive and on RadioAlbion.com. DLive is our new streaming home, and Radio Albion is Sven Longshank's excellent nationalist website. It's a place absolutely jam-packed full of nationalist material. We are lucky to be restreamed there, and if you are bored for nationalist content, that is a place to go. Sven does excellent work. He works closely with me arranging conferences and events. He is a nationalist stalwart, and his website is a place that should be in your bookmarks. So make sure it is if you want more excellent content like this. And if you're looking for all of the replays, if you're looking for previous episodes of PWR, which you may well be, we go live at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. Eastern time every Wednesday. But if you happen to miss that, you can find everything that has gone before on my BitChute channel. And you should be subscribed to my BitChute channel because it is a place for all of my weekly videos. They no longer appear on YouTube because since Susan Wojcicki took over, check her early life section on Wikipedia, you will see that free speech soon left the platform. So make sure you go over to my BitChute. You can also find information about future events, shows on my Telegram, my Gab, my Parler, and my Twitter. But make sure you are all subbed to alternative places. Make sure you are not just on the mainstream social networks, because if you are just on the mainstream social networks, when we inevitably disappear from those places, you will not be able to find us and keep updated. Now, if you would like to contribute to the show tonight, you can contribute to the show via Entropy. Now, I am placing the Entropy link in the chat now. It is also on my Telegram, and it is also on my Twitter. Now, Entropy allows you to make financial contributions to the show like Super Chats. And any financial contributions to the show, any Super Chats, any donations with any accompanying message will have that message read out live on air. Or if it is a question, it will be asked to the panel or the relevant member of the panel. So if you want to make a financial contribution, that is a good way. Also, if you want to ask questions, you can ask questions free of charge on Entropy. And the best questions, the best ones, are voted up and they are asked to the panel every week. So you can make financial contributions and you can also ask questions. Now, if you want to make contributions in other ways, you can make financial contributions via Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is available on my BitChute, or you can email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you wish to get my Bitcoin address, or if you wish for my bank details so you can make bank transfers. You can also write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you wish to know anything about myself or ask any questions, or if you need any help with anything or have any suggestions. So that's the best way to contact me. Now, before we get on to our excellent panel, it's been a while since we've had these guys on, but I'm very, very much looking forward to tonight. Let's go quickly over to Jason, No White Guilt. What have you been up to this week, my friend? And is there an after party? And
if so, my God, who is on tap? There's always an after party, and we're going to be having one on this coming Saturday, 2 p.m. Alex J. Illingworth. Make sure you're over on No White Guilt channel or Discipline with NWG or one of the many platforms that we will be broadcasting to, thanks to all of that censorship that Mark was just talking about. How exciting is it to be on with the absolute state of Britain? Hey, we have a colleague that we would like you to follow, Right Wing Universe, over on BitChute. He's doing great work. If you don't know who he is, find out. But otherwise, I'm really excited to be here, of course, with our great leader, Mark Collett, and the entire absolute state of Britain and all of the wonderful people who are in the live chat. A big hello to all of you, and I will pass it back so we can get underway.
Well, thank you very much. That was a very, very swift intro, just as the audience likes it, which means we can get straight into the show. And I do have a few things I want to talk about tonight. But before we get into talking about those, let's introduce our special guests. Now, these three people, the absolute state of Britain, or the people who make up the absolute state of Britain or contribute to the absolute state of Britain podcast, or however they want to describe themselves, are three of the most important men in British nationalism today. These three guys have been huge supporters of not only myself, but also of Patriotic Alternative. They are at every event and they are always there providing great chat, good humor, and are the life and soul of the party. But not only are they always there in real life, their online presence is formidable. You can find them over on the TRS network. You can find them on Telegram, and their excellent podcast, The Absolute State of Britain, has an array of different guests. It is extremely funny. And myself and the wonderful Laura Towler were on the show last week. It was a great, great episode. I cannot recommend these guys highly enough. I can honestly say that here in the UK, these guys do their best to bridge the gap between the online community and the real world community. They're an example to us all. Please introduce yourself, guys. Let's go around the panel. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you've been up to, and please plug your show and the network that it's on. You guys decide who goes first, because I don't want to put one of you guys above the other, because you are a little bit like brothers and you have a tendency to start bickering over nothing. So I'll let you decide amongst yourselves.
Shall I go first, as I'm on the left? Well, thank you very much for the kind words, Mark. Pleasure as always, and to Jason as well. What have I been up to this week? Trolling Twitter as usual. I've done quite a bit of exercise, weightlifting and running. And I went to visit Hampton Court Palace, which was, a really good experience. I recommend that to anyone that's in Southwest London. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, guys. Obviously, we've had both of you on Tassob before, and you're welcome to come back again. I can't really tell you what I've been up to this week. It's a bit of a secret, really. So maybe you'll find out more later.
Yeah, that's a cryptic way of saying not a lot, basically. I didn't have the initiative to think of that because, I don't know. It didn't occur to me to sort of dress it up like that. High praise indeed, Mark. I did enjoy that. I am sort of the eternal narcissist, so I like that, you know. I've not been doing too much, really. I did have the amusement this lunchtime of rereading the Independence article, which referenced Patriotic Alternative extensively, and the utter bemusement of these people at the fact that seeing people who are not us in our country, you know, pulling down our statues and inciting hatred against us is making people more amenable to taking their own side. You know, when are they going to get it? I feel like I could explain a lot of this in quite simple terms for them if only they'd listen. But that's about the most interesting thing I've done today, to be honest. But I had to rush to get ready. But I've been looking forward to it.
Well, it's good. You all had very, very concise intros, but it seems like you've all had quite slow days. Quite slow days. But I know that we did discuss something before the show, that all of you have been reading the recent publicity on Patriotic Alternative that has been pumped out by the mainstream media and the far left. And that is something that I know that Nativist particularly was ready to bring up. So we might as well get into this before we get into the news stories.
Well, yeah. It was quite a week. Hope Not Hate released their big report on Patriotic Alternative. I think that was on maybe Friday or something. And I was just howling with laughter when I was reading it, to be honest. It was the usual smears, but enjoyable the same. And then we had lots of mainstream media outlets covering PA finally, after we got shut out on Indigenous Peoples Day. And then the big one for me was on Sunday, Unilad, which is a page on Facebook with tens of millions of fans. They shared the Independent article on it, and the comments were pretty much all supportive of us. So I was buzzing after that. And I knew this moment would come. And of course, there's more to come. I've been very well informed that Louis Theroux is making a documentary and has been sold information by the two homosexuals that ruined Lauren Southern. And there will be a really big effort by the establishment to disrupt white nationalism, because we have the truth and nature on our side. And the elites want to keep their power and profits, and they use this depraved system to do that. And there will be a lot of disruption to the movement because of the power we possess from our ideas. If it's not, you know, YouTube, AstroTurf YouTubers like John Mark or vigilante intelligence set up to usher people away from white nationalism, the latter of which called you a Fed in a video, Mark, I'm not sure if you're aware.
Who's that?
Vigilante Intelligence. He's got a few thousand followers on YouTube.
I don't mean to be rude, but I've never heard of him. I've heard of John Mark. John Mark came on this show. I know he had something to do with Kurt Doolittle. However, their organization seemed to implode after Kurt Doolittle appeared to wet himself in public after he was confronted by several black men who he complimented on the size of their genitals. It was all rather strange.
Yeah, some strange cuckoldry. And I think we need to be aware of these sort of astroturfed influences that the person you mentioned earlier, Susan Wojcicki, will entertain to disrupt our movement. You know, certain people will pay big influencers huge amounts of crypto donations in exchange for support for Zionism or a moderate liberal message or attacks on radicals with the right message like TRS. They'll exploit disagreements in the movement of each country to try and create wedges. For example, we had people trying to exploit the Northern Ireland issue in the UK. And if it's not, you know, these anonymous merchants in the comments or skilled government agents directing the less intelligent people, many of them will be bored losers that don't actually care about winning, don't actually care about saving our race, and will just spend the whole time trolling the internet. So it's important to work out which influence have the correct ideology and disregard the troublemakers, so we can create a rigid movement that can go forward and make ground. Another risk, Antifa infiltration, which we fell foul of in London on Indigenous Peoples Day recently. Don't believe all you've heard. very untruthful, I can promise you that. I won't give too much away either on the details of that, but I will say Antifa are highly motivated and their skill in deception has greatly improved. And I will be informing people of the methods that they're now using, and they are willing to put in a lot of time. And then you've got newspaper articles and blogs full of lies that will dox people and thinly veiled incitement for us to be attacked. So, yeah, we are up against the entire power of the state and all the power in the world, and we need to be prepared for that. That time is upon us, and it's time to keep our heads about us and keep going about our work diligently.
Indeed, we do. Do you guys want to... Does anyone of the other guys add to this?
Yeah. So it's been really great, the amount of attention we've got recently in the media. And of course, like, it was a bit of a dam breaking. They didn't want to talk about us until they had this cachet of lies in Hope Not Hate, which was then went around. But it was kind of schizophrenic in a way, because it talked about how small PA were and how we'd never amount to anything, whilst also saying that you were the most notorious far-right figure in the UK and how PA was really dangerous because they might just be the one, the true chosen one who could unite the right in the UK and bring everyone under one banner. There was even, as far as I saw, an article on the Russia Today website, some kind of op-ed, where they got the wrong name. I think it may have been changed now, but they called us a Patriotic Alliance instead of Alternative. They didn't even know who they were talking about.
I mean, if I can add to that, it's always a bit of a treat when you get Hope Not Hate come out with a report, because the psychology, the sort of people who end up in these things. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some absolute psychopaths involved, undoubtedly. There's a remarkable video of Nick Lowell somewhere, basically getting turfed out of somewhere like, I think, Havering, maybe, in the East End of London. And the look of cold disdain on his face for these working class white men who are basically saying, get out of here, is quite remarkable. But, you know, the foot soldiers of all this sort of stuff. And I also sort of broaden that out to include the, you know, the sort of the midwit press, you know, your people like The Independent and that, and who obviously covered this quite extensively, clearly working hand in glove with Hope Not Hate. You know, these are like profoundly cowardly people. They stand for, you know, they stand for the rules and the premises and the interests of a hostile occupier. You know, they basically seek the most meager pat on the head and fleeting approval of people who are using them as like, you know, a sort of an interim tool against us, against the people that don't want to be dispossessed and replaced. You know, so the one bit of power these people have got is to go after and attempt to sort of destroy people like us. for standing up for themselves. You know, there's a real sort of it's petty, it's vindictive, it's sadistic, and you know the way they actually wield their power, it tells you how weak and spineless they are. You know, this sort of pathetic voyeurism of them, this sort of they're curtain switchers. You know, the way they sort of have this forensic analysis of dissident movements. It's a remarkable thing to see. It tells you a lot about the psychology of these people. You know, these are people who they, you know, they would never gain any power or status of their own accord in a healthy society in which we had self-determination. So what little they do get, they grasp with glee and they wield it very malevolently. But the fear is palpable, and it's always, you know, talking about how amusing it is whenever Hope Not Hate come out and do one of their sort of point and sputter jobs. What Native reference with Unilad is, which is something that, you know, warrants a bit of examination itself, the phenomenon of these things like Lad Bible and Unilad. I'm old enough to remember when these things first appeared, and they had a very different sort of editorial line, and they very quickly got co-opted, and you can look into who bought these things up, and yeah, usual suspects, big dinner on a Friday night, and so on and so forth. But, you know, yeah, like when they sort of put their foot in it and don't realise that they're actually sort of talking to a hostile audience, it's really funny because they're too used to talking to themselves. You know, these sort of over-socialised, deracinated midwits, who, and these are mostly white people, by the way, who wouldn't say boo to a goose, you know. But then when they get a bit of pushback, it's panic stations, because at some level they have a sense that what they're doing is morally wrong. And, you know, people will start asking questions about it at some point, and that sort of sense of discontent is growing.
Anything you'd like to add, Jason, before I throw in my two penneth about the publicity we've
been getting? No, please go right ahead. I'm very interested in. I've been waiting to hear what you have to say on it.
Well, it's been quite funny. It's been a bit of a roller coaster, because for so long they've been saying, "Well, patriotic alternative, they're never going to get anywhere. They're so tiny. They're minuscule. They're that minute group. They're not even a registered party anymore. They pose no threat to anyone." And then all of a sudden, they couldn't ignore it anymore. And now we're the rising threat. We're the most notorious people on the far right in Britain. We are racializing a generation of young people. We're taking back nationalist politics to the grounds of race. And that was the thing that I was most proud about. When they said that we were the group that had taken nationalist politics back to the battleground of race, that is the bit where I said, you're damn right we have. Because for so long, our politics has been dragged into this murky ground of trying to appeal to people it can never appeal to. Oh, it's not about race. It's about space. It's not about where people come from. It's about their culture. Oh, it doesn't matter what color of skin they have, as long as they all learn to speak English and wave a little plastic Union Jack. And all of this nonsense has been adopted by people that naively believe that if they sell out every single thing they've ever stood for, the left will embrace nationalism. And I've seen so-called nationalists go to gay pride events and stand there screeching and begging out of the closet loud and proud homosexuals and Marxists and Labour councillors, "You must join us. You must. Because if you don't, all the migrants who are coming here might be mean to you." And they've tried to turn every single thing into an issue to attract minorities into nationalism. But what they failed to understand, what these CivNats and these phony nationalists have failed to understand, is what they're doing is no different to what the left has done. They are just chasing minority votes. They're just chasing every degenerate subculture. The only difference being, all the people that they're chasing have already been co-opted and won over by the left and are never going to vote for us or anything like us in a million years. You're wasting your time going to a gay pride rally and throwing leaflets at them and warning them about Muslims. And what's more, who cares? I don't care. I don't care if Muslims are opposed to the LGBT agenda. In fact, that's probably one of the few things I'd agree with Muslims on. If Muslims want to stop the LGBT agenda being pushed in schools, I'm not going to go and leaflet against that. The people we care about are the true victims of multiculturalism, which is the white majority. And if we're going to go and put out leaflets, if we're going to go and protest, if we're going to go and drop banners, if we're going to go and speak to people, we're going to be doing this on behalf of the indigenous people of these islands. And we're going to do that completely unashamedly. And we're going to do it with smiles on our face. We are not going to kowtow to the left. We're not going to try and reinvent nationalism in some amazing multicultural way to get all the libs to buy into it, because that would completely fail. And it would fail for one of two reasons. Firstly, I don't think any of these libs would ever get on board with it. And secondly, if they did, if they all got on board and the nationalists came to power with all the libs under their wing, no nationalist policy would ever be passed anyway, because they spent all their time attracting people who would never allow a single nationalist policy to get passed. And we are doing something that in this day and age is truly radical. It is brave and it is revolutionary. We're going against the grain, but we're making progress doing that. And I think there's people sat in their homes all over Britain that are saying, all of this hate towards white people, why isn't there anybody standing up for white people? Why isn't there a single group out there that's saying that they're proud to be white, that they're sick of BLM, that they're sick of this anti-white narrative, that they're sick of all of the progressive nonsense in films, in books, in schools? And finally, there is. And all of a sudden, we've gone from being that group they laughed at to being the group they fear. And that's something I'm very proud of. And something I'm even more proud of is we've done it in less than 12 months. And I'm going to throw this out there. We couldn't have done it without these three lads who are on here tonight. They have been at the first PA event, the first official PA event where we unveiled it. They were at the events before that when we were planning it. They have been at all of the recent demos, events, hikes. These guys they're incredible guys, and I really am proud to call them friends as well. Now, is there anything anyone else wants to add to this before we go on to the big news story of the day?
Yeah, so obviously, we're never going to get the policies that we want, which is protecting the indigenous people of these islands, by trying to sell out to minority groups to try and back us. And that's something that a lot of CivNat parties have made this mistake before. Even Gerard Batten, who was temporarily the leader of UKIP, was coming out and attacking you personally, Mark, and PA by association because of your leading it. But he was a victim of this very same sort of leftward creep that happened in UKIP, where there was a power struggle within the party, and ultimately all of his supporters were forced out. People who did want some of the policies that we do, who wanted to go so far but were too scared to go all the way, these people were kicked out by the establishment within their party. And yet he's learned nothing from that, and he's still coming out and attacking us. But when you look at Gerald Batten himself, not everyone knows this, but he himself has married a non-white, so he's got an Asian wife. So it's hardly surprising that he's a CivNat, but it's very disappointing nonetheless.
I just want to jump in there before any of you do. There's two types of old people. There's two types of old people, isn't there? One type of old person is like Ursula Haverbeck in Germany, who thinks, I'm coming to the end of my life. You know what? What's the worst thing they can do to me? And she puts her neck on the line, thinks, I'm going to spend my last years going out in a blaze of glory rather than a whimper. And I understand that, because I think that lady's brave. That lady, she could just sit there, she could claim a state pension, she could knit, she could watch television, go and feed the ducks at the park and live an easy life. But she thinks, you know what? I haven't got much time left. I am going to do something important with it. And then there's people like Gerard Batten, a man who's got huge amounts of money. He was in the European Parliament for ages. He will have plenty in reserve. And he's getting on a bit. I'm not saying he's a really old guy and he's only got a year or so. I'm not trying to insult him. But even though he's done everything he needs to do, even though he owns his house, even though he'll have his pension from the European Parliament, even though he's made for life, he's still cucking, isn't he? He's still playing their game. And I'm really disappointed. And yeah, he did attack me. But interestingly, he didn't attack me for what I thought he would attack me for. He didn't attack me for the picture of my ex-girlfriend who had a swastika on her chest. And, you know, people have seen that picture. And it's really interesting because I don't have a swastika on my chest. Everyone's seen me without a top on. I don't have any tattoos. But people love to say, oh, well, because you dated that girl, you know, that's it. You know, you're literally the devil. He didn't attack me for that. He actually attacked me for being a former leader of the BNP. And he attacked me on the UKIP line that all former BNP members should basically be banned from any form of politics thereon. And in this day and age, when there are militarized gangs of blacks marching through the streets of our capital in political uniform with masks over their face doing salutes, this guy is more worried about sitting in a room with somebody who used to be in the BNP. And that tells you he's the wrong kind of old person.
If I can sort of pick up on the general theme, it's funny we had this article. Well, it's not funny. We obviously know why it was Hope Not Hate. We had the article in The Independent. Start of last week on Vice, James Poulter, who was involved with Antifa as well, he wrote an article about the demise of Tommy Robinson. And what it was really about was in large part was the demise of the pressure release valve and the containment operation. And, you know, Patriarch Alternative and the whole sort of milieu were mentioned quite extensively in that. That is the general direction of things. And I mean, what the Independent was saying about polarization. I mean, I can tell people this much, you know, our numbers went up over the during all the Black Lives Matter related unrest. I know that Keith Woods' numbers did on BitChute. I think, you know, our numbers on BitChute in general, the distant right, AstroTurf stuff that is also on there, you know, alt-light stuff. I know TRS's numbers went up. This is all despite, you know, the perennial deplatform. I mean, we were deplatformed by Spreaker about probably 6 weeks ago now, 7 weeks ago, I'm not sure. But, you know, the classic retort, as you say, there is, Euro, I think, made the point about schizophrenia. You know, these people on the one hand, they sort of want to go, oh, you know, you all live in your mum's basement and whatever. And it's like, oh, well, the rise of the far right. And, you know, in the next breath. And you sort of, when they belittle it, you sort of ask, well, okay, so what are you worried about then? Because normally they'll try and belittle you in one breath. You're talking to these people directly. And then in the next, you know, as I say, it's like they're, you know, scaremongering. And then you say, well, I don't know, what are you worried about then? Why are you engaging with us? Why do you think you've got to talk to us? Why are you so keen to shut us up? But I mean, you know, the other thing we've had as well, again, in the fracturing of the containment operation is obviously we had Laura's debate with Ricky Dalton. And I said on our last episode, what's funny is the more these sort of so-called civic nationalists have to engage with unapologetically racialized white people in debate, the less room they have to maneuver. I mean, ultimately, you know, the more they have to talk to us, the clearer it becomes because of the room that, you know, that they lose all the time to maneuver is. At absolute best, they are hostages of the exact same anti-white premises of the liberals and the left. If not, as they probably are in some cases, I mean, you look at Ricky Doolin, he's a bit of a weird character. They are just as zealous about them as the liberals and the left are. You know, they're sort of engaged in the whole, you know, what, who even are the British? Tactical nihilism. And a final thought on it really is Morgoth shared something yesterday, I think, was it yesterday, about 19,000 media graduates per year in the UK. And he was saying they'll all be blue checks. Now, I'll counter signal Morgoth there a little bit, because a lot of them won't, but most of them will want to be. And those that do will be doing it for not that much financial reward. It's quite a pathetic existence. You know, these people are not particularly well rewarded. You know, they're stupid little pawns, these people that write these things for The Independent and get involved with Hope Not Hate and the like. You know, and as you said, Mark, it's a brave thing to do what we're doing. So, you know, if you're invested in this, you know, you're somewhat heroic with all the conditioning you've been subjected to just for sort of having the bottle to be honest with yourself. The next step for that, if you're not actively involved in the real world, is, you know, take your OPSEC measures and do it. Because I'm telling you now, it gets a lot better once you start doing that.
Yeah, you mentioned the
prescribed organizations for UKIP, and one of the things that Batten had to throw against Mark was, well, he was in the BNP and that can't be allowed. One of Batten's major policies was to try and get Tommy Robinson to join UKIP or to be some sort of advisor, him being the founder of the English Defence League, which was another one of these prescribed organisations. So he can't even be consistent with his own stated worldview there. But Tola mentioned Ricky Doolan, and I don't know if this is well known by now, but for those unaware, Ricky Doolan is associated with some sort of black preacher who is actually in favor of white genocide, of forcible appropriation of land from white people in South Africa. And it's very interesting when Ricky Doolan goes out and accuses Laura Towler of wanting ethnic cleansing whilst refusing to admit that there's any such thing as an English ethnicity, when he's actually in favour of ethnically cleansing whites himself.
Yeah, that was quite shocking. It was Dion, I believe, Dion Moller, Secret Sources, who did some excellent work exposing that particular issue and the fact that Ricky Doolan had all of these really, really terrible associations. Also, he's not a very good singer, is he? He uploaded that really horrible video of him singing at a Hearts
and
of Oak.
And he is now, of course, awful. Working with Hearts of Oak.
Yeah, he is. And he had 600. When I saw it last, I've never seen a ratio so bad. I think he had 634 dislikes to one like. And I'm pretty sure the one like was him. It was really, really grim. Needless to say, Ricky's singing career, which he actually has, he's released a CD of his songs.
So, Mark, come on. David Brent released a CD.
No, Ricky Doolan's a bit like the David Brent of nationalism, but without any of the endearing personality traits that make you actually like David a little bit.
Probably an entertainer third.
Oh my god! I tell you, I could get you on every week just to do at least one really good impression of a classic bit of British comedy. But is there anything else anyone wants to add to this before we move on to the big issue of the day, which is, of course, the flood of illegal migrants coming into Dover? Does anyone want to add anything to the last topic?
I mean, fatigue, really, because it's the same old, isn't it? You know, it happens to be in the news cycle at the moment. And I mean, yeah, people are right to be outraged at the prospect of these people just sort of coming in and then being put up in hotels and distributed around the country. I mean, it's so insidious and the agenda's so clear, but it's only one facet of a whole sort of a whole replacement operation. You know, it makes me laugh when our detractors sort of put, you know, replacement on what have you in scare quotes. I mean, you know, It's even mainstream media will talk about some of it happening, but I mean, other than that, I'd like, yeah, you know, it's like we all know it's sort of going on. It's, yeah, I don't know. It's definitely, obviously, it makes it a good opportunity to sort of try and reach people and to awaken them and to sort of to racialize their thinking as needs to be done, you know.
Well, as much as we have our problems with Nigel Farage, he's one of the people who's been going out there and making a big stink of this. And he's definitely done some good work on it, as have others like Vinnie Sullivan and other people whose names I forget off the top of my head.
Active Patriot as one. He's done great work.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we've got to give a bit of a special shout out to Vinnie Sullivan and the guys from The Reality Report. I'd love to have them on this show at some point. They've done some amazing work down in Dover. And Vinnie's also done some very brave and courageous work going around London, exposing these Antifa squats and these anarchist dwellings that are popping up all over London. And this is where people are trained and preparing themselves to attack anyone who is a nationalist. So Vinnie does some fantastic work. Please support Vinnie Sullivan and The Reality Report. And Vinnie, take this as an invitation. If you and the guys from TRR want to come on this show, we would love to have you on in the next few weeks to talk about this. But I want to throw a slightly different perspective on what's going on in Dover. Obviously, it is a complete scandal. Obviously, thousands of these people are coming in. They're being housed. They're putting in four-star hotels. They're being looked after. We're paying the cost of all of this. But I've got to say this. Am I the only person who is slightly suspicious of Nigel Farage's involvement in exposing this? Because every time Nigel seems to be going the right way to do something good, he always seems to end up being more of a safety valve than he does a solution. And I'm a little bit nervous about this, and I'll tell you why. At the moment, there are a lot of people coming through Dover. And that is something that Patriotic Alternative has talked about. It's something that we're going to protest against. It's something we've got a big 50-metre banner drop planned in the next few weeks. We're going to drop a big 50-metre, 3.5-metre deep banner off the White Cliffs of Dover and suspend it so that the migrants can see it. We're going to say migrants not welcome on that banner. That's going to be happening in a couple of weeks' time. Now, that is something that we want to raise awareness of. But, and this is my worry, it's the tip of the iceberg. And when you're talking about these few thousand migrants coming in through Dover as illegal immigrants, you've got to bear in mind, earlier this year, the press was reporting that a peak of 15,000 migrants a day were coming into Britain legally to work in orchards, on farms, picking, sorting fruit and crops. We also know that the British government has gone out to Africa and said, hey, we want more African immigration. Boris Johnson has said to African nations that he wants more African immigration, that and that us leaving the EU will lead to him prioritizing African migrants. And obviously, the biggest part of this is, of course, the 3 million people from Hong Kong who are being offered a home here in Britain. And when you're looking, and I'm not diminishing what's happening in Dover, it's very important, but when you look at a few thousand illegal immigrants coming in through Dover, it really is a very, very small part of the problem. And compared to this huge number of legal migrants that they're letting come in from the third world, from Hong Kong, from anywhere where people will come here to take low-paid jobs and force Brits onto the dole, it does, it's eclipsed by those numbers. And that's something we must discuss. And I've got a feeling that if you ask Nigel Farage, or if you ask many of these people, another one is that Lawrence Fox. People seem to love Lawrence Fox, but Lawrence Fox, you know, he's against the he's against what's going on at Dover. But if 3 million people come in from Hong Kong and wave little plastic Union Jacks, he's cheering it. And I've got a feeling that some of what's happening down there may end up being a little bit of a safety valve where people are like, look, Nigel Farage is on the job. Things are being sorted. The real problem is the illegal immigrants. Well, last year, the Conservatives broke the record for net migration from non-EU countries. Now, that's Africa. That's the Middle East. That's the Indian subcontinent. And the vast majority of, apparently the vast majority of people who come in via marriage or some form of family visa and our legal migrants come in from Pakistan. But that's all legal. And that's something that we do need to keep talking about. And my fear is that Nigel is there to run another safety valve operation, just as he did with UKIP, because it was UKIP that largely kept the BNP from scoring big at European elections. Eventually, it wasn't enough, and the BNP returned two MEPs to Europe. But, largely speaking, they stopped the groundswell of support that would have gone to the BNP. And my worry is that Farage is there, he's down in Dover, and he is doing another job which will prevent normal people looking towards real nationalism. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think I'm being pessimistic?
For years, we had Tommy attacking the Islamic religion and saying, look, these people over here, they cause all these problems, whilst actively fighting against any group of people who would prevent more Muslim migrants coming to the UK. You know, this is the sort of thing that always happens with these Sivnats is, oh, we have a problem with Islam, or we have a problem with these migrants, but as long as they come here legally, we can't say anything against it. We need to control our borders. And it's ridiculous to say that we can entirely separate culture from somebody's heritage and ethnic background.
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with you, Mark. It's all smoke and mirrors by the establishment to keep people in line. I'm disappointed to see people on our side still thinking Farage has got this 4D chess master plan. The establishment will use him as long as he's useful. He'll get well compensated for what he does. And, you know, the boomer types, the white majority that's still left will be kept pacified from joining something like Patriotic Alternative, which aims to actually solve the issue. And Nigel Farage has always been an asset of the elites associated with the Conservative Party. He was given the mission to be the leader of UKIP because he's a very good speaker. He was granted, however many appearances on Question Time, huge amounts of appearances on Question Time, so the public became aware of him. How many times did the BNP get in Question Time? Once, and then they were deplatformed because BNP ideas were so popular. And the long and short of it is the Conservative Party have agreed the demographic replacement of the British people with the business lobby, the United Nations, and the board of deputies of British Jews. So that's where we are. And we need to discredit these traitors at every opportunity. They have turned our nation into a marketplace because they've made money their god. But soon there won't be that marketplace. The taxis and the food deliveries will be automated. The sort of shop fronts that they own will be uncompetitive. And there will be millions of these people left in Britain. And our children will be sharing all the treasures of this land with the children of the invaders. And they'll be doled out the universal basic income and the meagre existence that the globalists have in store for our children.
Yeah, I mean, just to add quickly, I suppose when I said that, you know, the housing of channel crossers in hotels and so on is only a small part of a bigger scheme, I wasn't specific, but yeah, I was talking about legal immigration, so-called legal immigration as a major element of that. I think numerically it's probably by far the bigger one, but I can't really offer any sort of more interesting take on the position of Farage in all of this. He boasted time and again about how his proudest achievement was, you know, sort of like sapping from the momentum of the British National Party, which obviously, as we've talked about, it's an important distinction, the distinction between basically being false and then being racially conscious, you know, and being explicitly racialized in terms of the interests and the ends that you pursue. So, yeah, you know, you'd be a fool to have any faith in Farage to do this. Yeah, and it's a good little distraction. Ultimately, you know, this sort of thing, it needs to be understood holistically, and it needs holistic solutions. Basically,
is there any other takes on that before? There is one big story you see I want to cover after this, and I thought you guys would be the best guys to cover this particular story. So is there any other takes on the Farage-Dover issue? Going once, going nope. Twice? No white guilt? Anything you want to say, mate?
No, I was going to say go ahead if you've got a big story. We do have, where Tala was talking about housing people and the splendid hotels over there in the UK. We in the United States, we were housing anti-whites in San Francisco, decided to house a bunch of anti-white dirtbags at the bottom of the food chain and some of the nicest hotels out there. And lo and behold, they made a meth lab. What a surprise. But we can go ahead and move on to the next story.
Well, this is something that I wanted to cover today because I saw this in the news. I've got the Daily Mail app on my phone, and occasionally I get stories beeped through to me. I think it listens to everything I say and monitors everything I do, so it pretty much knows what I'm interested in and what I would like to read or see, etc. Now, This story was one that popped up on the Daily Mail app. I'm not showing it on the Daily Mail app. I'm showing it on the Sky News page because it had a picture which speaks a thousand words, I would say. Here you see two people. Can you guess which one was the victim and which one was the perpetrator?
Sorry, Mark. I thought it was an advert. I thought it was an advert for sofas at first. You know, I saw a blonde-haired white woman and a black man. So I thought it was like the DFS website or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It could well have been a Tesco Christmas advert.
Oh yeah, or an advert for just about anything else. Yeah.
I bet that evil racist murdered the innocent BAME individual.
She's probably a police officer or something. You know, that's probably what it is. She's like, yeah.
See that? That's what you'd think, wouldn't it? You'd see a white person. You'd see a BAME individual or a POC, as they like to call them. And you know, if you believed everything that the media told you, you'd probably think from what the media says that it was indeed the pretty white lady that murdered the innocent, talented and would-be rocket scientist on the right-hand side. But actually, that's not the case. And the headline tells you that. Luella Fletcher Michie, rapper jailed for manslaughter of Holby City actor's daughter, has conviction quashed. And there she is. There's the daughter of the actor from Holby City. She was only 24 at the time. She was dating this 31-year-old. They went to a festival. I believe the festival in question was called Bestival. Yes, it was, in fact. Says it up there. I've obviously heard of this particular case before. So they went together to this festival. And basically what happened was he gave her a lethal dose of drugs. She took the drugs. And as she was dying, he basically pleading for help, he stood over her laughing and filmed it on his mobile phone so he could play it back at a later date for his amusement. Now, this guy originally was found guilty of manslaughter because obviously manslaughter means doing something to someone that could well result in their death and does result in their death. But it is not premeditated. So he didn't intend to kill her, but he did bring about her death. And by supplying her with the drugs, he was found guilty of manslaughter. But that has been quashed. That has been quashed. And I'll read a little bit here. A rapper jailed for the manslaughter of his girlfriend, the daughter of Holby City actor John Michie, has had his conviction quashed by the Court of Appeal. He was sentenced originally to 8.5 years over the death after she took the drug 2CP at Bestival. The 31-year-old of Enfield gave her the hallucinogenic drug and bumped up her dose before filming her die. So he actually didn't just give her the drugs. He gave her, knowingly gave her more than he knew that she could cope with, then filmed her dying. And she was found dead just before she would have celebrated her 25th birthday. But he was and he was sent to prison for manslaughter by gross negligence. But the Court of Appeal, Lord Chief Justice Burnett, said expert evidence on the likelihood of Miss Fletcher Michie's chance of survival had she received treatment sooner was not capable of establishing causation to the criminal standard. So his sentence has been quashed. And the Court of Appeal apparently have not ordered a retrial. So he won't face retrial. He's just going to be let go free. And I should imagine that with this, he will now receive substantial compensation as well. And it says here that he remains devastated by her death and he always wished that he'd done more to save her. When people say that, they've always wished they'd done more to save her. Always wished they'd done more to save her. That's an interesting turn of phrase, isn't it? Always wished he'd done more. Done more like what? Ring the ambulance? Do anything other than stood there laughing, filming her? Absolutely scandalous. But here you see yet again a case of an attractive young white girl dating a man of African descent. It ends terribly. He's charged for manslaughter and it's thrown out. I'd be very interested to see the background of Lord Justice Burnett. I might have a quick Google of his early life history. But what do you guys think about this case? Let's have some based takes from all of the lads, including you, Jason.
There's no doubt that if this was a white man, he wouldn't be getting off for this. There's an assumption of lower culpability, which is an implicit admission of the fact that these people have to meet lower standards. But this is a hate crime against our people, and it's a war crime in the undeclared civilizational conflict being waged against us by these people who shouldn't be here.
Yeah, the presence of people like that is a hate crime against us. It was done with malevolent intent. It's that simple.
Why would a good-looking Aryan girl be in a relationship with an African like this? It's because the dreidel spinners that run the media have made African men into a prestige class. They play King Arthur. They play Achilles. They play every Shakespearean character apart from Othello himself, probably.
Stormzy on the radio 24/7.
Yeah, all the rappers, of course.
They maybe wouldn't play Shylock.
Yeah. It's only through brainwashing that these women are attracted to these Afro-Saxon rapists.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's brainwashing. And people think this is only a tiny problem. They keep repeating the idea that it's only 4% of white girls doing this. Well, I'll tell you, because I walk the streets of London pretty often, it's becoming more and more prevalent, and the girls that are doing it are higher and higher quality. You will now see gorgeous girls with black men. And this is all down to, you know, the people that we know are behind this plan. You know, it's easy to find someone to blame in this case.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see stories like this, you look at the crime statistics. I mean, you'd be forgiven for thinking that most of these people are characterized by an innate lack of the baseline capacity for empathy and for morality that European peoples have. You know, it sort of suggests a fundamental incompatibility. You know, who could want to open the door to these people and flood them in, you know, in the tens of millions, as we're being told time and again, you know, that needs to happen, apparently, because we've got an aging population. I mean, heaven forbid the idea that we could sort of encourage our own people, incentivize our own people to have children. I mean, it's never worked anywhere before, has it? You know, but yeah, I mean, this is the problem. You know, women are suggestible. You know, ultimately, this might be controversial to some people. Well, tough luck, you know, eat it up, because it needs to be said. Women need to be led. That's why we have patriarchy, right? Now, that has been destroyed. That's been destroyed through subversion. So when instead of patriarchy, we have a sort of moral and cultural leadership coming from a mass media complex and an education system, which is more or less entirely under hostile occupation, as the extent that it isn't, it still does the bidding of the occupier. The occupation, by the way, are the people who literally want to eradicate us and ritually humiliate us along the way whilst we're dispossessed and blended out of existence. Then, yeah, this is the sort of thing that will happen. As I said, you know, women are suggestible. Ultimately, they need leadership. And unfortunately, look, you can look into the history of mass media and mass communications. We say every single time for a reason, because there's a certain group of people who, from its very origins, realize, yeah, we need to get in on this as quickly as we can. We've got to control the messaging. Greg Johnson, Somebody Divides Opinion. I repeat this so often because it's very, very apt, regardless of, as I said, the fact that he does divide opinion, said something very apt once. Our enemies control the media because they have to. This is exactly the sort of thing they want.
And when you have a phrase like White Lives Matter, it's powerful because it just gets to the core of the issue. In this situation, the judge has decided that white lives don't matter. They don't care about the life of this innocent white woman who was murdered by this black guy by giving her too much drugs. You know, if it had been turned around, if there was a black girl who'd been killed overdosing on drugs by some evil white man, I'm sure it would be all over the news. We always see in the news, how many stories were there about George Floyd, the death of George Floyd, in another continent that was here at the top of the news for months? And then these anti-white protests where they're able to get away with attacking people, they're able to get away with wearing political uniforms, nothing gets done of it. And the moment some white person finally has enough and gets into an argument with some non-whites, and that's front page news. Look at this evil racist who's had an argument with black people. As if there's any moral equivalency there. As if it's worse. Some non-white person's hurt feelings are apparently more of an issue than the murder of a white girl, according to the system and the people who decide what news to show you.
Look at this 5-year-old boy shot in the head on his front lawn.
Yeah, why isn't that international news?
Yeah, and there comes a point where you've got to be firm with people. When you're trying to reach people, you've got to be firm with them. You've got to say, look, what offends you more, right? Some choice words or racially motivated violence and humiliation of our people in their own homelands by people who were there without their consent. People who were here, you know, again, we were never asked. That's become a bit of a meme, hasn't it? For good reason. You know, you've got to figure out your moral orientation on this and get your priorities right.
Even to the extent that we're supposed to believe that some hurty feels, some naughty words are a justification for murder in and of themselves. When some black person murders a white person and say, oh, well, he called me an N-word. Well, that's okay then. We're just supposed to let them off the hook. That's how we know that we are being oppressed as a people. We are being oppressed by our own government. We do not have a country anymore. We have more rights in countries somewhere around the world, because at least there's not laws on the books to actively discriminate against us. We have anti-countries. Countries which actively advocate against their indigenous population.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I mean, this is exactly what's taking place across the West in every single country. We don't have governments. We have a nation, our people, the body of our people. We are a single nation with many countries, but we don't have governments, and we haven't for the totality of our lives. There are a number of things that are going on in the story. Of course, this woman, as an adult, even though she was a young adult, she ended up with agency, so she's responsible for her actions. But ultimately, if we follow the trail back to her early youth, we see that she is a victim of the anti-whites and anti-white narrative that taught her that white men are pathetic and non-white men are fantastic in all ways. And I think we should also be careful about not making this about just about a particular group of non-white males, because it wouldn't be any better if this ended up being some other group of non-white males. They are all are said to be better than us in one way or another, or in many ways or another. They all are put up for our women to praise and laud and follow, and they show in the commercials, as you were mentioning earlier, I think it was Tala, about thinking it was a sofa or couch commercial. Well, of course, we see very often here in the States when they're selling a mattress, it's always a non-white male with a white woman. And that is the norm, indeed, when it comes to these sorts of things. So this woman was brainwashed by anti-whiteism from a very young age. She ended up growing into an adulthood, getting into this environment where she thought she was with men with hearts of gold, because in every movie she watched, every television series she saw, the white men with their clean-cut, shaven faces and morals, they ended up being hidden axe murderers. They were operating chainsaws in their basements on everyone that they could lure into those dungeons. The non-white people, though, the non-white males, who gave every signal that they were dangerous to anyone with any sense whatsoever, were shown in these little stories, these movies, these books, etc., that have hearts of gold. And they're just crying alone in their basements about how the world is always out to get them. And so that is what these women, as well as our men, end up believing is going on in the world. And of course, what happens when something happens like we have Cannon Hennett murdered by an anti-white here in the United States, an anti-white non-white? We have that story is buried underfoot as best they can because it conflicts with the anti-white narrative. And that's what they do with every event that conflicts with the anti-white narrative. That's how you know that you are living inside of a narrative rather than in reality. But this, when it comes to the law and what ends up happening to those who commit crimes, such as this individual who knew exactly what he was doing, he was enjoying drugging her, he was enjoying putting her into the state of near death and then watching her fade from reality, fade from this world. What you end up seeing, it doesn't matter with the laws. You don't have to have a law that says, well, in this case, you have to be extra tender or sensitive or lenient on the non-white criminal in this case. No, you have an anti-white morality that informs the application of every law and rule and code at every level in our societies, in our legal institutions, in our universities, in our workplaces. And so since that is the morality, the quote-unquote morality, that is the morality of our day, the zeitgeist of our day, since that is the morality. All these things can be dilated, they can be broken, they can be bent, they can be rewritten, and enough people and enough nodes of power will nod their head in consent that the right thing was done, because it was the moral thing that was done. That's why we have to live outside of the anti-white narrative. That's why we have to apply our own morality in contradiction to this, and we need to do so with loud voices, full lungs, and do it on a regular basis. I'll pass it back.
Thank you. Some great points from everyone there. And I just want to really echo the thoughts of the group, because this is very important to remember. This was a white girl, obviously, a blonde-haired white girl. And she died due to the actions of a black male. And every excuse has been made for him. He has eventually had his conviction quashed. He will not even face retrial. It's just been quashed. That's it, thrown out. He's free to go. And he'll get compensation for this. And I say this so often, and I know that some people are going to get bored of me saying it, but I'm going to keep saying it because it needs to be said. If the races were reversed in this case, if a white man had drugged a black woman and stood over her dying body, laughing and filming it, he would never, ever have seen the light of day again. I think that would have been murder. I think they would have said he gave her their dose. I mean, this guy did knowingly give her a higher dose that she couldn't cope with. And then he stood there laughing, filming her dying. If a white man had given a black woman an overdose and then recorded her death on his mobile phone while laughing as she pleaded and begged for him to call the hospital or to call an ambulance or to call medical professionals, I think he would have gone down for murder. The case would have been all over the press with a huge, huge degree of racial discussion about the case. And I think this would have been another case where people would have been out in the streets. People would have been protesting. People would have been holding candlelit vigils. Celebrities, media influencers, politicians would have commented on it. But this case is another case that has seen a white victim not get any justice and actually seen all racial discussion around the case completely quashed. Absolutely sickening. I do feel for her parents. But at the same time, I've got to say this. I did read a report where the parents had said they'd welcomed him into their home. They'd welcomed him into their hearts. And I have to say, if you have a daughter, please be careful about who you let her date. This guy had trouble written all over him. Probably quite literally. He might even have a tattoo with the word trouble written on him. That's how obvious it is. And I just feel... You know, I feel sorry for the parents, but gosh, you've got to look after your children. And being a dad, you know, this is something that I look at now and think, oh my gosh. But I can tell you now, if my daughter, I'll do everything in my power to ensure that my daughter doesn't make that kind of mistake. But isn't it amazing that cases like this are so frequent? That black-on-white violence is so frequent, yet the entire mainstream media not only covers up this violence, but promotes more and more racial mixing, despite the outcome being so overwhelmingly negative towards those of European descent. Absolutely sickening. Is there any final points people want to make on that before we go over to answer some of these generous super chats we've received and answer some of the entropy questions?
Yeah, I would just like to add one thing on that. Listeners to The Absolute State of Britain will know it's a bit of a meme that I talk about, you know, white people being under occupation. Well, I think if, you know, not that we didn't know it, but it's really been spelled out over the past few months with everything since, you know, George Floyd and how that was turned into a cause célèbre. It's really become clear that, you know, what we actually are, it goes a little bit beyond that. You know, to say we're under occupation is not sufficient. Frankly, we're hostages. We're hostages in our own societies. You know, forgive me if I could be accused of blackpilling for that, but it's actually just a means of trying to wake people up. We're hostages, you know, and our hostage takers, our captors, revel in humiliating us. or whilst we are, you know, dispossessed and disempowered. There's only one thing you can do about that, and that ultimately that is to collectivise, and that is to adopt a mindset of ruthless self-interest. You've got to stop accepting the enemy's premises. You've got to be unapologetically selfish from a racial point of view in terms of our interests. You cede no ground morally, and above any of that, because that's all rhetorical stuff. Again, if you only watch things and you listen to things at the moment, you know, Patriotic Alternative for one is growing rapidly at local level. I'm seeing it myself. Get involved with it. That is the best thing you can do, is become part of a community, because from that community over time, and it will grow and grow, we're going to have the means of actually sort of standing up for ourselves and saying no and pushing back.
Let's go on to some of these super chats. We've got $3 here from Junta Momonari. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, and this is going to be a good one for the taste of lads, did you see that the United Arab Emirates normalized relations with Israel and made anti-Semitism, any criticism of Zionism or Jews, illegal and subject to beheading? Well, that doesn't surprise me, because the United Arab Emirates are, or is, a country which is sort of a playground for the rich and famous. It's a place people go to escape when they're chasing criminal prosecution in their
country. I thought that was Israel.
Well, it's both, isn't it? And
behead those who insult Israel.
What do you guys think of this? I think you're going to have far more base takes than me. I'm going to give this over to you guys.
I think nativist has to start on this one.
Yeah, this was just dotting the I's and crossing the T's. The Gulf Cooperation Council has been in the sphere of influence of Zionism for a long time. Saudi Arabia, that being the big one, they are completely at the behest of the Zionist project. The same with all these smaller Gulf nations. I think the UK military even has a submarine stationed in Bahrain or something. So there's this big conflict between Sunni Islam, which is on the side of the Zionist power structure, and the Shia Muslims, which are in the sphere of influence of Iran. Bin Salman of Saudi Arabia has already made the clerics change the Islamic beliefs on Jews to become less anti-Semitic. So this is the way Islam is being shifted in a direction that is amenable to the West. We're seeing these sorts of government NGOs now, which are introducing gay ideology to Islam. So they're going to keep up with this. They're going to make Islam less anti-Semitic and more gay on the Sunni side of things, and that's the direction it's going to go.
It's a bit redundant when you say less anti-Semitic and more gay.
Oh dear. It's obviously not a positive sort of sign in terms of, you know, the ability of a certain group to influence these places. Not that that's anything new. I mean, the Gulf nations in general are sort of basket cases, and it's all predicated in the first instance, not necessarily now in all cases, it's predicated on oil wealth. Most of these countries, they're not really countries at all. They've got a native population of about 15% in a lot of cases, although that native population tends to be privileged above all the others, or at least getting that right. But they're strange places, you know. They have sort of racialized castes, actually, of labor. And you sort of got, you know, Europeans and then other Arabs at the top beneath the you know, people in like Qatar and the UAE who don't really do a lot. You know, they'll get a stake in any business that's set up, and they don't have to do anything for it in these places. And that, you know, they're basically sacred cows. They get free houses and everything to sort of placate them. And, you know, type 2 diabetes is rife in places like Kuwait. So it's that sort of thing, you know, and then you've got the sort of South Asians at the bottom end, and like, you know, East African housemaids at the bottom end of the labor chain. They're these bizarre places. They're like temples of neoliberal capitalism. It's quite awful, actually.
Are there any further takes on this before we move on? No. Well, we will move on then. Syrup gave £5. Thank you very much. And said the purpose of the media is to protect paedophiles and start wars for Israel. Indeed, it is. Meat suit wielding brain gave $5. Thank you very much, my friend. And said, at a time of promise, we have hope, not hate. media attacks on PA, and divisive 37 words messaging. Don't be divided. Raise big families. Network. Perform activism. Don't be blackpilled. Don't be divided. Nationalist unity is strength. United we win. Yes, we do. Thank you for such a positive comment. Well, there's always going to be detractors. And at the end of the day, if people have a different idea to me, a different idea of the way... When I started PA, people said, Mark, you can't just sit on the internet taking super chats, talking about stuff. We need a real world alternative. And I came up with PA. And I started the idea for PA years ago with that first camp that had just 12 people there. And it's grown and grown from there. And we've done so much, whether it's the We Were Never Asked Day of Action and the amazing documentary that Laura Towler produced with those survey results. If it's the White Lives Matter Day of Action that went international, the two very, very successful conferences or the hikes or the regional events, we've done so much. But I understand that people will say, Mark, you're not the best man for the job. You've got too much baggage. There's a picture out there of you with your ex-girlfriend. And people will say that. And that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Say what you like. But you have to, at some point, stop talking unless you can provide an alternative to what we're doing. It's all well and good being an anonymous troll, sitting on the sidelines, throwing dirt and talking about how terrible what we're doing is. But unless you're doing something better, sooner or later, you have to just stop throwing mud. Because there is an option. And if you think we're not the correct option, there are many, many other groups. Or you can start a group yourself and you can tell people who are disingenuous and who are trouble causers. Because whatever they throw at myself, at Laura, a patriotic alternative, whatever they throw at us, they never once throw a viable solution or actually back another group or do something useful themselves. And we will keep going the way we've been going. We will keep with the positivity. We've got the Dover banner drop coming up in a few weeks. We've got other events coming up to the end of the year. There will be our Christmas parties. There'll be regional events. We're in the process of appointing a new regional organizer. We're actually doing something. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect. I'm not saying Patriotic Alternative is perfect. But we are putting our heart and soul into doing something. And if people just want to criticize and don't want to do anything else, that simply isn't good enough. I don't know if you guys have anything else you would like to add to that particular super chat.
Yeah, lead, follow, or get out the way, basically.
Yeah.
And even our enemies, as loath as they were to admit it, were saying, you know, Mark Collette, he might actually be the one who could unite all these people. Terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll echo what you said, Mark. Constructive criticism is welcome by a DM or email. But a lot of these people they're not in it to win. They're not in to make constructive criticism. They're in it to troll. They're in it for the online social club. They're in it for their own ego. And at the end of the day, when all said and done, and we find out in 30 years whether we've brought salvation to our people or not, you need to ask yourself, what did I do when I had the chance? And that's all I keep in my mind. I think at that moment and my ancestors looking down on me, what did I do? And I can say I've done a darn sight more than a lot of people that spend pretty much every day criticizing me. And their own achievements are absolutely nothing in comparison.
Thank you. Well, we've got another super chat here. This is from Rory London, $3. And he said, do you think success is possible by gaining influence in a major party like the far left group Momentum did by joining Labour en masse and getting Corbyn elected leader? Well, thank you for that, Rory. But no, I do not. And the reason I don't think it's possible for us to do what Momentum did in Labour is because the difference between Momentum and the sort of mainstream Labour Party is the mainstream Labour Party just cover up that they agree with everything that Momentum says. The only actual difference between Momentum and mainstream Labour is Momentum was slightly critical of the treatment of Palestinians by the State of Israel. That's the only difference. However, if you joined the Tory party and you said, I'm against immigration, there'd be many people in the Tory party who would be absolutely aghast and want to have you thrown out for saying that. Whereas if you entered the Labour Party and said that you were totally for open door immigration and that you just wanted to flood the country with endless million non-whites, I don't think there'd be any people in the Labour Party that would disagree with you or want you kicked out. There might be a few that would say, well, don't say that too loudly, as you might put off some of our working class supporters. And that's the difference. The Conservative Party is fundamentally at the very highest levels and through its infrastructure, actually quite non-white, nakedly capitalist in the worst way possible, and massively pro-immigration. And I've said this time and again, and I think people have really got to take this on board. I'm no fan of the Labour Party, and I wouldn't vote for either of the main parties, never have, never will. But the Labour Party doesn't have as bad a record on immigration as the Conservative Party. We've had 10 years, or nearly 10 years of Conservative government, and every time they've been re-elected, they've promised to get net immigration into the tens of thousands or bring in a fabled Australian points-based immigration system, yet they hold all the records for the highest levels of immigration. They are not a party that are like us, and the idea that we could go in there and reform them from the inside, unfortunately, is not workable. But the TASOB guys might feel differently to me about this. What do you guys think?
This is exactly what people tried to do with UKIP, and the establishment of the party to put them out, because our ideological opponents, or even in parties which supposedly are a bit more civ now on our side, they are always on the lookout for people like us getting in there and trying to move them in the direction we want to, in a way that, as you say, the leftist parties, they don't have to be on the lookout like that. So I like, it's been tried before and it's failed before, and I'm not going to tell anyone not to try, but I don't really see the point anymore personally. Like, when UKIP was the only game in town, we supported UKIP. Now we have Patriotic Alternative, and we back you 100%.
I am going to tell people not to try. British politics is very centralized. It's first past the post. It's controlled by financial elites. It's controlled by the Jewish lobby. And as soon as you start talking about the issues that actually matter, you will be immediately sacked from the party. There is no way to do it. And what actually controls this nation now is those financial interests, the donors to the party, the old landed gentry. They are the true power brokers in Britain. They are the ones that head the BBC. And that's the power structure that exists. We have to understand it, and we have to work in a dissident way to oppose it. So, yeah, it's important people understand the actual power brokers in why this is happening. And people spend far too much time thinking in the liberal democracy paradigm. It's totally counterproductive. We need to do things differently.
Well, I think we're all in agreement there. Does Jason have anything to add? I know that you're not in this country, but do you have anything?
Well, yeah, I mean, because the same thing is suggested here in the States all the time, and I'm kind of tired of this sort of pedestrian suggestion. It stems from a fundamental misunderstanding of so many things: human nature, power, the sources of power, the morality of the day, which of course is anti-whiteism. You move into one of these parties, as individuals have tried here in the United States, and wasted colossal amount of time, energy, resources, and intelligent people on these absolutely feckless, gelded endeavors, where they go into these parties and they think, well, we'll just take this over. We'll just do X, Y, or Z, as though the party exists in a vacuum in some lab somewhere. There isn't a morality that's governing the human beings that are the entities that operate the party. Of course, that means that immediately those individuals are going to see with this hyper immune system, this hyper immune response. When something shows up, when an idea shows up, and when individuals espousing ideas that show up that could undermine the very precarious position that they have relative to the power structure, anti-white ideology, and those individuals behind it, as soon as such an individual or idea shows up, they immediately excise it. They immediately move in with this immune response to destroy everything that could potentially jeopardize their precarious situation relative to the superstructure. They know very well that they are only permitted to operate in a little disagreement to those who are fully anti-white, and that if anybody comes along that wants to pull in a little bit further of that direction, they're going to get rid of them. Not only that, but if you could somehow take a step beyond that, you're going to have to deal with the financiers who actually support the party in question. They're going to pull out, and then you won't have the finances, you won't have the money. The media support that is run by anti-whites, who allow you to be this dead end for opposition, or this lame or crippled opposition, that the moment they see that you're actually a threat to the anti-white superstructure, they're immediately going to cut off whatever media they used to give you that was positive or lukewarm or whatever, and turn it into something that is far more poisonous injurious to what you would like to achieve. And the party would be over in the blink of an eye. So absolutely not. You cannot take over any political party. It is a totally useless endeavor. Don't try to do it in the UK. Don't try to do it in the US. We have better things that we can be doing with our time.
And towards that end, I believe that Mike Enoch and Eric Stryker are just about to launch a new political party in the US, the National Justice Party. They have a website, which is nationaljusticeparty.com. And they're having some sort of reveal, which I believe will have their sort of like first press conference in about 2.5 hours. So that'll be worth looking into if you're in the US.
Indeed. There might even be a question about this later. Anyway, White Agility gave $10. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, none of the streaming services, with the exception of YouTube, work for me in the Redwoods, and I still haven't been able to resolve the issue with AT&T, but I've been catching up with PWR and BitChute, Radio Albion, and Entropy keep buffering too. Happy streaming. Hopefully I can listen live soon. Well, thank you for the donation, and I'm sorry the streaming doesn't work. However, there is an option on DLive to reduce the bandwidth. You might be able to do that and watch it at a lower resolution, but thank you for the super chat, and my apologies that you can't watch live. Junta Momino gave another $5 and said, have you heard of the Rethinking Ethnicity, Majority Groups and Dominant Minorities by Eric P. Kaufman? The book predicts a future where nations with a dominant ethnic group will be a thing of the past. I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does.
But I'm sure it doesn't predict that for Israel.
Yeah.
Oh God, that caught me off guard. That's
he's a Friday night dinner guy, isn't he?
He is, but there's a bit more to it than that, because he's also part Hispanic and part Asian. He's a bit of a, you know, he's like the ultimate new American with enough Friday night dinner ancestry in there that he can be sort of, you know, part maybe of the ruling elite as opposed to the sort of, you know, managerial middle class. But yeah. Yeah, white shift is his concept, isn't it? It's like we've got to reframe whiteness so actual white people don't start sweating too much and noticing that they are indeed white, they are indeed under attack, and maybe as white people, we better do something about it. As white people. And it's literally, you know, advocating this is how we're going to manipulate and placate them. Yeah. That's Eric Kaufman, and that's his, you know, that's his shtick, if we'll forgive the, you know, the very sort of the very, you know, Yiddish expression.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I mean, these merchants are at the stage where they take a lot of glee in saying that we are on a trajectory to become a minority. I think it's already happened in the US. Who was that Nobel Prize winner? The one that apologized on Twitter. He said he'd been stitched up on his own internet for looking at child porn. What's his name?
Help me out here. Sure.
Paul somebody. You're talking about the New York Times bloke.
He's a Nobel Prize winner for economics.
Yeah, hang on a minute.
Paul Krugman, is it?
Yeah, Paul Krugman. Yeah, that's
yeah,
the one.
Yeah. He's another one that's taken Glee at our minority, and Bill Crystal has. And
well, was it the director of the SPLC or perhaps
Mark Potok? Yeah, the graph.
The graph on the wall that says like countdown to white minority in the US.
Yeah, I mean, this is where their level of power is, that they can take the piss like this, and they take a lot of pleasure in it, and we are being humiliated. And we need to get these clips in front of our people. I've made videos with summaries of that, and, you know, you can do it in 2 minutes and keep sharing to friends and family, you know, make media channels and get the word out there, because our people especially don't like being sneered at like that.
Well, thank you. Jacob Patriotic gave $3. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, hello, Mark, and the rest of the panel. I hope you are doing well. Question for Jason. Will you be getting involved in Eric Stryker and Mike Enoch's National Justice Party?
I haven't heard anything from them. Mike said he was going to reach out to me, but I'll certainly consider whatever offer they make.
Excellent. Well, I obviously wish them all the best. Anglo Scott gave $3 and he says, tell it. Thank you very much. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much. And said, always good to hear the taste of boys. It certainly is. Based Zuma gave $3 and said, great show tonight. What's happening with the application to be a party? Will you ever have the Patriotic Talk team on the show? The party application, that is still being looked over carefully. That is going to be something on with. There is no initial mega rush for that because no elections until next year, but that will be in soon. We have got something very pressing on at the moment, and people will see the fruits of that very shortly. Trust me on that one. Alex May gave $25 and said, are you feeling positive about registering as a political party? Well, I am, because that's another question about that. Well, thank you very much. And I am actually feeling positive about it when it goes in, because we have gone through everything with a fine-tooth comb. And if they reject it this time, I think that would give us grounds, potentially, to legally challenge any ruling, because we have met everything. And so far, we are very confident of the changes that have been made. Rory London gave $3 and said, what's your opinion on going to university in this day and age when they are Marxist cesspits, as I want an education and qualifications, but don't want to waste money and put up with deviant Marxists? Well, I'm going to be very quick on this one, to the point. Go to university if you want to be a doctor, a solicitor, something you need a degree to be. If, however, you just want to go and work in the real world, going to university can often hamper that. And there are plenty of very, very, very good things that you can do in life where you can basically be your own boss because you have a trade and you don't need university for that. I know that people overlook this, but a very well-paid job is just being a locksmith. If you live in a place with near a lot of students and you're a locksmith that has a 24/7 call out, on weekends you can earn thousands and thousands of pounds each weekend just going and helping students back into their houses when they've locked themselves out because they're drunk. There's loads of jobs like that you can do where you can work from home, you can run your own business, you can be the master of your own destiny. And if you do get doxxed, or if you do want to do something political, you don't have to answer to your boss on Monday morning because you are your boss. What do you guys think of universities?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. So if you're intelligent, there are some worthwhile courses you can do. Particularly law. We are going to need lawyers. We need our people to be pursuing power. That's worthwhile. A lot of well-paid STEM jobs, obviously, computing, things like that. So if you're intelligent, it's worthwhile paying the £30,000. But if you're not so gifted, then yeah, think outside the box, because it is just a complete waste of money. You know, electrician, plumber, locksmith, things like that, all very well-paid jobs. And you'll feel better than just working in an office, because it's not very good for you, you know, working as one of these administrators of the tertiary industrial sector, let's say. working with your hands is a lot better, and you can actually build something and feel worthwhile. And you don't want to be getting into debt, particularly girls. I would say girls, there is almost no point in going to university. The amount of brilliant, intelligent girls I know that, you know, they have IQs approaching 140, and, you know, they just get stuck in just a career that means nothing. I know a lot of girls approaching 30 now. They have no children. They don't have a stable boyfriend. I just think we need a cultural shift back to where it was before, where girls are having children in their 20s. So, yeah, in summary, if you're an intelligent man, go to university. If you're not so gifted, don't. And if you're a girl, don't go at all.
I think it's a bit of a Ponzi scheme for most people. You know, we had it right when university was there for, you know, your top sort of 5% or thereabouts in intellectual terms. Yeah, and it was things like law, and it was medicine, and it was maybe, you know, I was gonna, maybe it's not so apt to say politics, philosophy, and economics, because if you look at it, actually, you know, the trait of political elite, you know, it's a bit of a cliche that the trait of political elite all did that at Oxford or Cambridge, isn't it? So, you know, maybe, you know, that sort of thing would be all right if we weren't under, you know, under a sort of a hostile occupation, of course. But I can recall going to university and you're looking at people running up debt to go out and get drunk on cheap alcohol for however many years and develop drug habits and sort of just lead feckless, nihilistic lives. And it's a total waste of time. You know, I go back again to the thing we saw yesterday about 19,000 media graduates a year. This was a thing that really, I mean, it didn't just ramp up into New Labour. I think, you know, you got like the post 1992 universities, the former polytechnics and that. Well, that happened under the Tories, didn't it? So it's not as simple as that. But this sort of thing, you know, media studies and all these sorts of other degrees, look, you've got to learn how to do these things somewhere, but it shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't be attainable to anybody, because frankly we don't need that many journalists, we don't need that many people producing television or whatever. And it's just like, you know, it's sort of like getting people into debt for naively following their hobbies. And again, it's another thing that sort of runs tandem with an individualistic sort of please yourself in the moment sort of worldview, and everything centered around, as you're, you know, as a child and an adolescent, everything's centered around your whims in the moment. Well, no, because you haven't got the life experience to sort of understand. Again, actually, this is where white people fall down a little bit more so than foreign ethnic and racial groups in our society, because they'll actually, quite well reasoned a lot of the time, get more pressure to do things, frankly, that are a bit more useful. And then, you know, a lot of our children, if they go to university, don't. They're indulged a little bit too much. And unfortunately, the problem with that is that happens again in this sort of post-New Labour world of, like, yeah, massive expansion of all this sort of stuff and the sort of nonsense you can study in universities. Yeah, it's a total waste of time. You're just going to go into a dead-end job after it for the most part, you know, because to be exceptional is by definition quite a rare thing. I think, you know, university should be for your intellectual elite, and then there is no shame whatsoever in good trades. You know, other people should be learning good trades.
It's just part of this problem of, like, stretching out adolescence and stopping people from growing up. And it kind of links into what Native was saying there about, you know, you get, especially with women, but with men as well, where they get to, like, you know, mid-30s and then they decide all of a sudden, oh, it's time to have kids, but, you know, they haven't saved up any money, they haven't got a stable job. They basically just take university as an opportunity to party with their friends. They don't really achieve much in it. And then, you know, they walk away from that with debt that stops them from doing other things they wanted to do with their life. I mean, I never went to university, and it's probably one of the best decisions I ever made not to go, because it is just a waste of money.
To add a personal touch to this, my younger sister was into art and photography at school. I advised her not to go to university and to train under my uncle, who's a wedding photographer. It's a job where you can make a lot of money. She could have followed her passion and not been in any debt. But as it turned out, she followed in the crowd to university. She won't graduate until she's 24. Then she's going to want to use all these skills, skills in inverted commas that she's picked up at university to pursue a career for a few years. And her trajectory to motherhood is going to be at least pushed back to her late 20s. So that upsets me. I was ignored. I gave this advice to her sincerely in front of my parents. But, you know, it's mum and sister. You know, older brother doesn't know what he's talking about. Another story, a personal touch, is, you know, I used to work in the city. I knew very successful people in finance from completely working class backgrounds, from the likes of Bermondsey. I knew head of fixed income from one of the massive banks, probably earned something like 300 to 500,000 pounds a year. And guess how he got his job? It was in a pub in a town near me, and he was recruited as an 18-year-old because the bloke said, "That's a brilliant pint you've pulled, mate. Come and work in the City of London." And that's how it used to be. But all these jobs are shifting away from the white working class Londoners that used to take them. And it's now the Oriental tech nerds that have PhDs in whatever. And, you know, they're very submissive to authority. And they make good recruits for these international banks. And our people are losing out at every level.
Well, we do have a lot of super chats left. Usually the super chats come in early and then peter out as the show goes on. But tonight people have caught me off guard with the super chats. So the super chats have stacked up now. So we're going to have to do a bit of a quick fire round to get us through this. I'm not saying we should rush any of them, but we have to be very concise and to the point. And there seems to be a fantastic debate going on in the actual live chat tonight. People know what I'm talking about. I am actually amused by it, so it doesn't bother me. Meat suit wielding brain gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, "Yeah, but Toller, not to black pill, but the women mixing are going to be the liberals who are racially debasing and disempowering themselves. So it's arguably a good thing they leave our race and surrender IQ." I'm mixed on that, and I'll tell you why very quickly. I think the girls' race mixing are generally at this moment in time not outsiders, but people who are almost ultra conformists, and they would conform to whatever system they live in. Originally, when society was anti-race mixing and the media didn't really push it heavily, those doing it were outsiders. They were radicals. They were people that you could never really understand. They were always going to do something different to the crowd. However, I think today a lot of people doing it are doing it because they're told it is the best thing to do. And those people would probably do whatever they were told was the best thing to do. So if they lived in a healthy society, those women, or a large portion of those women, may well be housewives, mothers, and do what the healthy society told them to do. Has anyone got some quick thoughts?
I'm sure that woman who was murdered by her black boyfriend with the drugs was a conformist too.
It's a complete cope when people say about all these wonderful eugenic effects we're going to receive when all these weak people leave the gene pool. I don't see it like that at all. I think it's a system that is brainwashing them into making bad decisions.
I agree. And people can say I'm a cuck for saying that. But look, as a dad, I've not gone soft. I just realize that putting different things in front of your children has different effects. We don't allow Sophia to watch any television. She doesn't have any screen time. All of her little friends have screen time, watch TV, sit watching rubbish like Peppa Pig and other things on television, and the TV's always blaring in the background. And other parents constantly compliment my partner, saying, "Wow, Sophia knows so many words, doesn't she? She speaks so much more than all the other children." Yeah, because she's constantly being read to and having one-to-one time with her parents, not being lumped in front of the TV. The influences you put in front of your children have a huge, huge effect on them. And we must never, ever write off the power of the mainstream media and the establishment in influencing what our children do. These girls, they're not going out trying to destroy the white race. They're going out doing what they have been brainwashed to do. Damien Demento gave £20. Thank you very much. He said, "Our white children that go to our schools should know that the truth about who not to associate with, bearing in mind we have to be careful what children repeat at school. How best do we educate our children the disgusting likelihood of degeneracy when associating with joggers, for example?" Well, thank you for the super chat, Damien. I think you just have to foster the right thing inside your children. And one thing I say to women when I speak to them about this is, do you want your child to look like you? And if you put it in that terms, nearly every woman says yes. Nearly every woman says, "Well, of course I do." Now, the other week, I've talked about this on the show before, actually. Somebody came over to our house and said to my lady, "Oh my gosh, Sophia is starting to look so much like you." And my missus just beamed with happiness. You don't get that if you're not with somebody of the same ethnic group. That is all lost. There are ways to incentivize women to stay within their race. And yes, the enemy have a huge, powerful machine that works against us, but we can push back against it with simple common sense and healthy influence at home. But if you want to keep your children safe, take that television out of the living room. If you want your children to be ruined, give them the tablet, give them the TV. If they're sat there and they're under the age of two and they're flicking through a tablet, watching rubbish on TV or watching anything on TV, you've already laid the foundation for your child's destruction. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, one point you said there was, you know, you can kind of put ideas in their head to not do that. But I think people are kind of naturally against that, if not for the brainwashing they get in the other direction. It's not that we need to tell our kids, don't race mix. We just need to keep them away from, you know, all the anti-white propaganda that says to do that, essentially, or give them some amount of kind of pushback of the stuff that they are exposed to, because inevitably they will see that even if they don't watch TV.
Yeah, you need to get the right toys, the right books, and you need to get a back catalogue of old children films that you vetted. Because now we've got subversive children's books, we've got subversive children's films, and you can't really show them anything from the modern era. You know, Disney companies being bought out by international merchants with certain types of noses. And, you know, we need to be vigilant of it and do our own thing. And there will be an industry there for white people that don't conform to what they're being fed. So we go back to something we discussed before. You know, there is a business opportunity for pro-white business there, children's toys and children's books. So that's something people can do.
Well, thank you. The Thin Red Line gave 10 US dollars. Thank you very much. It's a great show. Is there any news on PA registering as a party? That's still ongoing. But don't worry, the application will be in by the end of September, giving us plenty of chance to be registered for the next round of elections. Horace gave £5, thank you very much, and said, can we get a quick lull for the FBI tweeting out the protocols of the Elders of Zion a couple of hours? Shame it wasn't the Simon Harris version. But
yeah, so Simon Harris will be looking down on looking down upon us with great glee, God rest him.
Blunderbuss gave 25 US dollars. Thank you very much. And he said, missed last week's stream. Catch it on BitChute, my friend. Why does Ricky Doolan want to increase the British birth rate if he also wants to hand out passports to anyone in the world and make them British? I don't have a clue what Ricky Doolan was speaking about. I don't think even he has a clue. I think the only thing in Ricky Doolan's mind, in that tiny little marifat pea brain of his, is that ultimately, and this is all that you really wanted to put over, is to him, anyone can be British. And any problem can be solved by handing out passports to anybody who wants to be British. The guy was completely clueless. And if you want to see all the supercuts of the debate, he had them copyright striked. So please go and check them out on BitChute, where he can't do anything about it. Tough luck there, Ricky. You've lost again. Sam Sheridan gave 10. Sorry, that was probably a little petty, but deserved.
Needless to say, I had the last laugh. Sorry, I was doing it.
Yeah. Hit us with some. What would be the best partridge to humiliate Ricky Doolan? Come on, Toller. Give us a partridge to humiliate the Doolan.
Something about a friend count where you could just sort of say, like, you know, I don't know, how many black donors have you got? Yeah, and he'll give you a number, and then you say, well, I've got 104 friends, so I've got more friends than you've got black donors. That's as good as you're going to get on the spot, I'm afraid.
Definitely. Well, I enjoyed it. Sam Sheridan gave 10 US dollars and said, yes, I am a meme, and why? Who's made me? This podcast, Ayatollah, and every activist who stands up for what the white man. Okay, in all seriousness, keep up the good work. Also, when's Andrew Joyce making an appearance, or will that shut down the entire internet? I think that'd be fantastic. Andrew Joyce, people keep asking for you to come on. Get in touch with me, or I'll get in touch with you when I speak to Dr. David Duke next. We're going to get you on the show. I also want to get the lads from Patriotic Talks on the show, the guys from the Reality Report, and we've got All Well and Good. He is booked in for the 9th of September. We're getting the guys from New Zealand on who took part in the White Lives Day banner drop down there. They were the ones that did it down under. Fantastic guys. They're coming on. And I also want to do a series of shows with more guests of up-and-coming content creators in maybe twos and threes, like this show with round-the-panel discussions. So, yes, we have got a packed schedule going into September and beyond. Pep gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, hate to black pill, but nativist is right. I live in Leicester. Mixed couples are the norm for the few whites left. Yes, I do think that's more self-selecting than conformism, though, because I used to live in Leicester, and most white people have moved out of the centre of Leicester, which means the ones that are left, a tiny percentage, will be stuck there, but most who are still there will like it. Johannes D gave £15, thank you very much, and said, con tell it, Dr. Boyce.
Come on, tell it. It's an old meme, that one, Mark. That was Alex McNabb from TDS. Having to answer for his satire, I think. Yeah, anyway.
Ordo Nature gave £10 and said our enemy's greatest strength was hiding in the shadows. They're out in the open now. Whites are waking up, even if they don't completely understand the who and why. Much appreciated, Mark, Jason, and to all of Taysob friends. Keep the red pills flowing. Well, thank you very much. Jekatiro gave $5. They are ignoring these cases because they are believing in creating a blind utopian society where people won't acknowledge they are having a handicap. Instead, deficiencies are being bandaged by modern technology and methods. Thank you very much for the super chat, and I agree.
I don't think our enemies are necessarily blind to what they're doing. It's not that they actually believe they're going to create this utopia. They just hate us.
You see, I think some do and some don't. I think there are all the ones at the top definitely want us gone. But I think there are many white liberals pushing for white genocide, and they are so brainwashed and so part of this cult. But I do think they're actually doing the right thing. I think there's many, many sneaky people at the top, especially the ones who run the media, who absolutely know what they're doing and are doing it with malice. But I do think when you see those girls holding up the refugees welcome banner, I don't think they're thinking, let's get rid of all the whites. I think it is misplaced altruism. I think it's pathological altruism. And Laura,
yeah, the true believers on that topic. Yeah, true believers.
Well, look, sorry, we're going to have to fly through these super chats because we've only got 14 minutes left. Blunderbuss gave $5 and he said, I love your idea of an event at Dover. Make sure you get beautiful drone footage. We will do our best and thank you for the super chat. Mr. Bloom gave $20. Thank you very much. He said, hey, Mark, great show as always. Friends of mine have talked about doing another banner posting, but this time focusing on spreading awareness about the murder of Canon Hinnan, because clearly not enough people know due to the media. Do you think it'd be something worthwhile? Yes, definitely. I think that other banner drops and other things would be very good. Migrants not welcome would be a fantastic phrase. That's something we've talked about. The only thing with Canon Hinnant is it is a US case. And I don't know whether some people in the UK would be lost on that. But yeah, keep up the great work and any activism will be gratefully reported by us all. Johannes D gave £10. Thank you very much. He said, sorry, Mark, I meant to say, come on, tell it, Dr. Boyce, but was laughing too much in memory of Dr. Locke Boyce. Rest in peace. Well, thank you very much. Promethean Persona gave $3. Thank you very much. And said, the number one thing we can do to stop our people from committing the crime of biological European erasure is to go free and learn to deprogram our friends, family, and society from the anti-white meme pathogens. Thank you very much. And the last super chat is from Marty Morosley, £5. Thank you very much. Get our lads on Tinder, Hinge, Bumble, etc. Get them talking to girls, and if they start mentioning support for BLM, the LGBTQP, or say they have race mix, tell them how disgusting that is and unmatch. I'm half joking, but shaming works. Well, do whatever you think works, and if it works for you, go for it, and you might meet a nice woman in the process.
I've done that before, and you get banned.
Really?
Yeah, like if you say you, if you have certain ideas, you just get banned very quickly.
All these so-called dating apps, which are actually, you know, hookup apps, are owned by the usual suspects. So what do you expect?
Yeah, match group early life.
I was going to say something here, but if I tell this story, I'm going to get into lots of trouble. So I might not tell the story, but I'm kind of feeling cantankerous, so I might tell it. Hell, I'm going to tell it anyway. There was a case once, and it was widely reported in the media, where somebody joined Tinder and set their profile picture as a famous Austrian painter. And apparently the cheeky prankster was inundated with people swiping right and chatting him up. So swiping far right. So I do think there is hope out there on these dating apps. And I think you can spread our politics wherever you go.
I've noticed recently that girls are very interested in far right politics. If you're unashamed about it, a lot of them will take it very well.
Perhaps we need a nationalist dating app. Perhaps that's the solution.
Well, White Date was full of
worry about that. I always worry about a nationalist dating app. I think it'll be sort of 95%. Or should I say, it'll probably be 90% men, 5% men pretending to be women, who are probably feds, and then 5% women. And I think the odds of a nationalist dating app actually working in anyone's favour, other than the feds' favour, is probably slim. I don't know whether I'm being too negative there, guys, but what do you think?
Haven't they had, like... I'm sure there's something like Trump Date in the US or one of these things where, you know, they weren't quite so open, but more sort of civic nationalist, and they've tried that sort of thing. So I think maybe there's a place for that, and maybe stop some of the UKIP people from getting with their Asian wives and instead find them a white girl.
Well, I think there is White Date, isn't there? WhiteDate.net, and they have... I am making a joke out of this, and I'm not diminishing the great work that WhiteDate.net does. I believe they have had several really big success stories where people have actually met on White Date, gone on to get married, have children, and done everything good. So I don't know if anyone has any examples of that, but I believe we need to reach out to people in a variety of different ways. And, you know, I obviously wish WhiteDate.net all the luck in the world. And I would love to see them be an absolute success. Obviously, I'm taken. I have a child. I'm not going to be if you see me having a cheeky browse on WhiteDate.net, it isn't me, but would be an imposter. But back in the day, I might have given it a whirl and tried my luck. I don't know. Has anyone had any successful interactions on WhiteDate.net?
I had some pretty bad ones, to be honest. A lot of liberals that took offence at more right wing views, and a lot of complete weirdos. My recommendation would be real life, 100%. I know some people that do really well on the apps, but they're pretty rare. Just gather your confidence and go and speak to girls in real life, even on the street, like coming home from work or, you know, outside gyms or whatever. Just be polite about it and, say something about yourself and you'll do all right.
So, nativist, do you just hover outside the gym waiting for the girls to come out of you? Have actually been in and done any hard work?
Well, I've had a couple of moments with girls in the gym, but yeah, it's a risky one because you get these guys, especially black guys, they go around every girl in the gym and they like harass them, and you don't want to be that. If you do go for approach in the gym, because everyone's a regular and you see each other all the time, you need to make damn sure that it's the right call and you've already created a connection there. So I'd say, you know, develop some casual conversation first before you take it any further. But the streets are much easier because the traffic is so transient. You'll probably never see them again in a big city. So, you know, just go for it. Don't let someone that's really attractive slip through the net.
Yeah, I've got to say with dating, the biggest block for young men is the idea that they're going to be humiliated. And there is this big issue with young men where they believe that if they go up to a girl and she says no, it's somehow going to be recorded, televised, and the whole world is going to be laughing at them. And what you've got to remember with dating is when you're going out there and approaching people or speaking to people on social networks or speaking to people on dating apps, it's basically a numbers game. And you've just got to remember that if you send a message or if you say hello to somebody or if you strike up a conversation in a coffee shop and that person doesn't want to talk to you, they're not going to film it on their mobile phone and upload it. They're not going to be laughing about you hours later with their friends. It's just going to be a short interaction that is over very, very quickly. And if it's not positive, dust yourself off, move on and try again. A lot of this is a numbers game, and you've just got to be confident. And you've got to remember that rejection is all part of life, and you just man up and take it on the chin.
There are some women who are a bit vindictive, but it's generally quite few numbers. And, you know, a very long time ago when I was a bit younger, I was one of those people who found it hard to kind of talk to girls like that. But you know what? You find that, or I found in a situation that one time I went up and I asked a girl out and she turned me down, and I was happy afterwards, you know. Even though it hadn't worked out, I was happy with myself. Look, I put myself out there and I felt good about myself for that reason, you know, and you don't need to take it badly, you know.
I will say, in Euro's defense, he is a Chad. We've been out to a student bar in London before, and we sat down at a table and some liberal talking point like LGBT came up, and Euro just went, "That is disgusting." And then he had this girl at his beck and call for the rest of the night for about 2 hours. This was 18 months ago. So being unapologetic in your views really does work.
Apologies are for the weak. If you know you're not wrong, don't apologize for anything. Women will gravitate towards strength. They gravitate toward confidence. Something else to lads listening, if you're sort of involved at all or want to get involved within nationalism, you know, making yourself somebody who's trusted and sort of well-regarded within our circles won't do you any harm. Women notice that sort of thing. You know, they look for a bit of standing. It's not got to be from charisma or whatever necessarily. Be dependable, be helpful, you know, be somebody that people will actually go to. That goes a long way.
I agree. I think it's just be pleasant, be confident. And if you can make a girl laugh, that is one of the key things. And also never be a walkover. I'm not saying you should be nasty or horrible to people. But if you're constantly a walkover, that doesn't impress women as well. And I know that Euro is quite successful with the ladies. In fact, he is more successful with the ladies than he is at Mario Kart Double Dash. He's a bit of a disaster.
You know, you keep telling this story, but you've always you always tell your version of events, which is just quite wrong in a few ways. You know,
the funny thing is, Euro did come to my house with his rather lovely girlfriend. And at the beginning of the night, she was clearly quite attached to him. But after she'd seen him get thrashed on Mario Kart by me, you could tell that she didn't want to leave with Euro. I had to shoo her out of the house. I said, look, if at any time in his life he needs your love and support, it's after a drubbing like that. And she said, go on then. I'll take one for the team again.
Shut up. You're so full of crap, Mark.
I am. But it is amusing. It is amusing. That's why I like having you guys on, because it's you can get this level of banter. You can get this level of banter. And if you meet us in person, the banter is even better. I've got to say that Toller is better. He's markedly better in person than he ever is on a stream. And that's not to say he's bad on a stream.
Oh, behind yourself.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You are too well behaved. Tonight you've been a bit subdued, whereas in real life you're singing, you're doing crazy impressions. It's always good.
I will say also, someone said in the chat pornography. And yeah, you've got to get off that ASAP. Your game will go up so much when you quit that rubbish.
Definitely. And also, with porn, once you're locked into that, there is very, very little incentive to go out there and get something in the real world. And so many men are trapped in that cycle of porn addiction. It's scary. It's still one of the things I get the most emails about to this day. But anyway, we have one last super chat from Lee Peter, £25. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, just to help out. Well, thank you. I'll make sure that goes to a good cause. And you will see the fruits of your donations in the next few weeks when we announce the date for what is happening in Dover. So look forward to that, and thank you, Lee. Well, unfortunately, we haven't got round to the questions, the non-paid questions. Some of them have already been answered because they coincided with the Super Chats, but the late flurry of Super Chats kind of threw me. But thank you so much for the generosity from those who donated. It is always very touching. I'm just going to do the lemon chest now because we're on DLive and everyone loves the lemon chest. I have just contributed to it and I am distributing rewards as we speak. And as those rewards fly out to everybody in the chat watching live, I would just like to say, first and foremost, thank you so much for Taysop. Can you guys give yourself very brief outros because we're running very close to the end here?
Yeah, thank you very much for having us on. The time ahead is going to be, we're going to be under more scrutiny and pressure, but keep your spirits up and always look forward to our destiny. And cheers and goodbye to Jason as well.
Yeah, it's great to have us on, Mark, and you're welcome to come on Tassob again anytime you like. Just remember, guys, our victory is inevitable as long as we believe it to be. So never cuck.
Our victory is as inevitable as Euro's losses on Mario Kart. Tola, do you have anything left?
You're like a broken record, mate.
And when I say broken record, believe me. Anyway, I won't do that now. Rightstuff.biz, Absolute State of Britain. You'll find us there. What else to add? Yeah, I've got a YouTube channel. I'm sort of shamelessly promoting that at the moment. Sooner rather than later, I'm going to start doing streams probably a Friday night. Light-hearted, off-topic sort of stuff. So, you know, there you'll get the
dinner on a Friday night?
Well, yeah, some of us don't have that sort of engagement. Euro, you might. You know, I eat light on a Friday night, and then, you know, I want to serve my people. So, you know, if you want to hear that crack and repartee that Mark promotes, then, yeah, that you'll find it there.
Tola, please, can you call it Sabbath Alternative?
I'll give it some thought, scratching my head. But, yeah, I mean, again, what Nate said's right. You know, nothing worth achieving is easy to achieve. So, and I'll say it again, you know, don't just keep watching things. You know, we're all fairly recently involved in all of this. It's so much better once you're actually in on it and you're not just watching stuff and, you know, commenting. You know, get involved in the real world. There's a lot of stuff going on with Patriarch Alternative and, yeah, it's a very good thing to be part of. There's great honour in it. You're already sort of in a vanguard if you understand this sort of stuff, and it brings with it responsibility to sort of, you know, pull your weight.
Well, thank you. Over to Jason. You've been a bit quiet tonight, my friend, and you haven't been on camera for a change. I hope you've been doing something gameful in the background there, but please give us a quick outro.
Yes, it was getting educated by you all. It was a fantastic show. Magnificent to appear with the Absolute State of Britain again and everybody in the wonderful chat. And, of course, with our great leader, Mark Collett. On Saturday, 2 p.m., TAP, Mr. George and I will be with Alex J. Illingworth, and we hope to see you all there. Theafterparty.tv, you can find me there. Theafterparty.tv, you can also find me at nowhyguilt.org, and I will pass it back, brother.
Well, thank you to everyone. I will be back on Friday with my weekly video, which will be up on BitChute. Keep your eyes peeled for information about what we're up to in Dover. And I am also going to be, as always, on a number of different streams. But tomorrow there is a very important stream with Miss Britannia 007. She is hosting Laura Towler and Links in the Shadows. I will be tweeting that out tomorrow. Make sure you tune into that. She's a great new content creator. She's here on DLive and she hosted me a week or so ago. It was a fantastic show. So that just leaves me to say thank you to the Taysob crowd. You have been fantastic as always. Thank you to No White Guilt. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. It is always very touching and I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. But most of all, thank you so much to everybody who's been here. I am here for this amazing community. It is always wonderful to be a part of it. I feel very privileged and humbled to be in the position I am in. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful night. Love you all and see you same time next week. Stay safe, guys.